Patrick Timpone with Andrew Goss, and it is The Real World of Money. So there's no, well, let me ask you this. Do you think the stock market is a leading indicator of what's going on or a trailing? So if we see some real ups and downs in the market, does that mean that there's something, you know, with the debt and all this stuff, it's something deep, dark, yeah, is even worse going on?
Yeah, but you know, we've talked about this for years now, mm-hmm, and I told you, as I still believe, that the problems are not going to start in the stock market. It's more of a trailing indicator in this regard.
More trailing.
Yes.
Yeah.
The leading indicator is in the bond market. That's where you really are going to see the nuts and bolts come off the wagon there, if you will. So keep your eye on the bond market. It's very, very, very important.
The bond market, upon, let's explain what you mean.
The credit, let's just say the credit market.
Credit market.
Right.
So what you're saying is if interest rates go up, as you said, the 30 years are going up, the bond prices go down.
Correct.
And then people begin to sell because they say, I don't know if I want to keep in this because this baby's going south. And that causes a problem.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because the activities in the bond market, where it becomes harder to sell bonds or liquidity starts to dry up, mm-hmm, or some things become totally illiquid where, mm-hmm, you can't sell them at all, then folks get nervous. And as the cost of capital rises due to this pressure, it, of course, forces out the speculators in the stock market. And the more the recession picture starts to emerge, the less people are willing to speculate in stocks. So it's all going to start in the credit market.
Kind of explain to us, like we're a golden retriever, a young child, mm-hmm, with unemployment all-time lows, people, right, you know, looking for work. There's a lot of action going on in this country. Consumer confidence is, people keep, you know, doing stuff. I mean, how can a recession happen? What are the fundamentals that could cause that? And recession, well, technically means, what, 2-3 quarters of negative growth?
I think that's what
it is. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Negative GDP.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're at like 3 or 4% now. There'd have to be some pretty wicked things happen in 2019 to do the big R word.
Like a 60-day government shutdown.
Or something like that. But the president's got to know that, don't he? He must have people.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
He understands that.
Yeah. So, and the number of risks that people are willing to take in the bond market, when rates are falling, of course, you know, they're great. But when rates are rising, people are just more leery to buy a long-term bond obligation. So if you look at the situation over the last year, I would say that the risk appetite in the bond market has been declining. People are just not willing to take those kind of risks. And so as that declines, overall liquidity declines, and it just bleeds into the stock market.
So let's look at the world for a second. How does this all play in with the whole Brexit thing and Germany and France, and how is this tied in with the financial picture of the world? Is this part?
Well,
we must be involved in it, right?
Yeah. We're in a global market, and you know, to those in the British markets, can you imagine how unclear things are to them?
Yeah, man, they're about to dump me and just,
let's buy some treasury bonds.
Right.
And so until, you know, because America's looking pretty bright. Relative to, say, France or Germany or the UK. And so a flight to quality, safety, is what the dollar's enjoying right now. It's keeping us out of the pool, so to speak. But once the confidence in the dollar shakes, then who knows what they're going to run to for safety next. But I do know that it's not good.
Some pretty interesting things going on between Iran and India, and they are full on trading, doing things with the rupee. Lots of money going, oil back and forth with goods and services, buying drugs from India so there are more and more people that are kind of saying, you know, this whole dollar thing is not working out too well for us.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise.
Yeah, and I've cautioned about that in the past. You know, the reality is that the dollar, if for lack of a better term, is the world's piggy bank. And so, you know, you store your wealth for the long term in dollars because of their recognition, because of their stability and so forth. And over 80% of the world's reserves are held in dollars. Over 90% of the world's trade is conducted in dollars. So, but for the first time in a long time, we've seen that start to recede. And dollar supremacy, for the first time ever, seriously, is being called into question. Hmm. Now, the worst thing that could happen to the dollar is, of course, people stop using it. Because then, if people stop using it, they don't throw it away, right? They spend it. And the only place that it's good is here, really. If the rest of the world decides they don't want dollars anymore, the only place you can spend it is here. What can you buy here? Well, you could buy all the land, all the real estate, all the buildings. And if all of that money from other places, I think the estimate is that fully two-thirds of the printed $100 bills circulate outside the United States. Yeah. So if all of it comes back home and is spent in buying things here, then the price of everything is going to skyrocket. So I think it's really important that we maintain the dollar supremacy as it comes to, as it relates to being a store of value. And I know the folks that drive the bus, they know that. I mean, they know for sure that if the rest of the world decides they don't want dollars anymore, we're in trouble. There's nothing anyone can do about it.
But isn't they, you know, who they are, they have to be seeing what's going on with Russia.
Yeah,
and Iran and places, right. You know, and India, and of course,
well, we
China,
can't very well,
you know?
Liberate Russia.
No, I mean, no, because they got nukes, man. They'll fight back.
Yeah, no, so
you don't want to do that in China. You can't do that either.
Nah, they'll fight back. Right? Liberate them, exactly.
Yeah.
So all that we can do is jawbone and talk, and try, you know. Now you know why I say the dollar's backed by F-16s and Marines. It's
and you can really understand why President Trump wants to spend more and more money on defense, because he knows that this is what he's got, you know.
Yeah.
To do deals around the world, you know.
No doubt.
Make nice, otherwise
we'll blow you up.
We'll blow you up. I know. Mm-hmm. You know, they probably don't say it like that.
No, I'm sure they send this Kissinger type guy in to sugarcoat it a little.
Yeah. You see, this is interesting. As you know, Russia really has been selling treasury bonds, right?
Yeah, they have.
They have.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not fake news. They've been really doing it. They've been really doing
news.
You can look at the graph here. Boy, it's just like fell off a ledge in this last 6 months or so. Just and now the rumors are, and it started by some Russian dudes, probably at the Trump Tower, just kidding, that they're going to buy $10 billion worth of Bitcoin to evade U.S. sanctions. Can you imagine? Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Wow.
Even the Russians aren't that stupid.
I wonder where this rumor is coming. I mean, when the
I should
all
start
coming.
One that says they're going to buy $10 billion worth of
numismatic coins. Right?
Yeah.
You don't think they're going to do $10 billion worth of Bitcoin?
No, I don't, man. I wouldn't touch Bitcoin with a barge pole. It's
yeah, but you know, Putin's he's a crypto.
Not stupid.
He's a crypto guy. You know, didn't he meet with the Ethereum guy a couple of years ago? And he met with him
and
right?
decided the whole thing is not happening.
Oh, is that right? Okay. He said, like, "This is not good."
Let me see if I understand this.
I'm going to go and wrestle a bear. Forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. I whether that happens or not, I suppose I shouldn't be so dismissive.
Sure.
Maybe he might, but one thing he's not going to buy are dollars. That's absolute sure.
He is just not. You know, he's not. He's not happy with what's going on with the sanctions all around the world, right? With his buddies Iran and Turkey and all this.
You know, but if we, again, I publish this automatically as the figures are updated on the U.S. Gold Coins website in the links section.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at it, you'll see that we're, you know, across the world, everyone combined, we're at about $6,200,000,000 grand total as of like November 1st.
Grand total of what?
That's the amount of treasury debt held by other countries.
Oh, really? Is that
much?
So it's mainly Japan and Russia
China's still.
I mean, I'm sorry, Japan and China's got about $1 trillion each, right?
Yeah.
So there's four spread around the rest of the world? $4 trillion?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that much. Yeah.
Ireland, UK, Sweden, Switzerland, Cayman Islands, Saudi Arabia. It says like 6-2. And say November 1st of 2017, it was 6-3. So I guess you can make the case that they're shaving their holdings around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, there's no rhyme or reason. Some countries are increasing while others are decreasing. Mm-hmm. So it is, I think, entirely based upon the needs of an individual country. There's no grand dump of the dollar going on, that's for sure.
But is it possible that these guys could all get together and they could probably do it at Davos because the president's not going to be there and, you know, have their own meeting and just get together and say, what is this dollar stuff? Let's just dump our stuff.
Let's do that. What shall we use instead?
We would buy gold, maybe.
Okay, I'm down with that, but that'll never fly. Not enough. And certainly the power players now don't have enough. So now you're talking about a fixed supply. Oh, no. You know, the PhD economist will talk them out of that real quick. No, we have to issue some new currency before we can wipe out the old one. And I've been for years looking for something to emerge. For a minute, I thought it was the euro. But who the heck would do that now with the euro coming apart at the seams and the countries involved thinking about bolting? We're hearing Frexit now, French exit.
Yeah, man. I mean, and there's folks that are conjecturing that Germany's really kind of falling apart at the seams and on a deep level. And they really are. I think a lot of the Germans, it appears, some of the articles, that they're just kind of fed up and with this open border thing and not having their own currency. Man, most of the countries.
As are the Italians.
Yeah, and the Italians too. Yeah.
The Quiddly movement. they want a Quiddly. They don't want any part of it. So the more the ECB wants to tell the individual countries how to manage their fiscal affairs, and the more they say, oh, well, you must throw your borders open to whoever wants to come in, which is what gives us the open borders concept here. I've never argued more about anything than I am about the idea that you can fence in your yard. I don't understand the concept why you can't fence in your yard. It's immoral now?
Well, it's immoral and it's crude and you know, they're our brothers.
And it's worked since the days of castles.
You just can't do it. You just can't do it. That's what,
tell it to the Vatican.
That's what the argument is, huh? Yeah, do you see the wall around the Vatican?
Yeah, that's what I said. Tell it to the Vatican.
See the wall around Ove's place?
They know how to build a wall.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No doubt about it. And it has been that way for centuries. If you want to delineate your property or you want to prevent things, other people, animals, whatever, from coming onto your property, you erect a barrier. That's what you do. So why? I would think you wouldn't find anybody that would disagree with that. But in reality, you know, apparently I'm the idiot. So I just keep my mouth shut now. Whatever you want to do, you guys do. I'll keep storing my wealth in gold and silver coins, knowing that whatever you do to the value of money or to the monetary system, when the dust settles and when things emerge, I'm not going to be standing there holding some string of digits going, wait a minute, but you said my money's here in this string of digits. Gold and silver coin,
I know, it's in
my hand, I've got it. I don't care what you guys do. You do what you want.
I don't know if it makes you feel better, but if I had a bunch of dollars, man, I'd be changing those dollars for gold. Knowing what I know.
Yeah, if you're going to store them.
Knowing what I know today.
I would be all over it.
I mean,
no, if you're going to store them
for
the long term, well, you could lose your coins.
Long term, knowing what these people do and how they do it and how they've done it for 100, 200 years or 100 years, they're not going to change, man.
I don't disagree. No. I think you're
they're not going to change.
No, they can't. And they're kind of locked into the whole thing. So what's most likely, what do I see big picture? That the Fed, once the banks exhaust their ability to inject money in the place where the Fed used to do it. You know, so they're drawing down their reserves. We've seen that. We've demonstrated that the banks that own the Federal Reserve have drawn down $582 billion from their reserves last year.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, that is a full 120, 130, almost 200, yeah, almost $200 billion more than the Fed took out of circulation, the banks put in. So they only have $1.6 trillion more to go. So how long could the banks last? Well, theoretically, three more years they could last. Theoretically. Now, given that 60% of the nation's debt is due and payable, which means they're going to pay it and then throw the bond away in the first 5 years of Mr. Trump's presidency, it looks like, you know, 3 years in, the banks will be exhausted. Don't know where the money's going to come from then, but it's my guess that the Federal Reserve will simply reverse its position, and it'll engage in quantitative easing. Now, maybe it'll be sold to us in the idea of some new program. Who knows? Some kind of infrastructure bank. I've heard that kicked around. But some sort of an entity that creates debt instruments, which the Fed will buy, not because it needs to, but because it's a green thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then that will inject a bunch of new money and allow the Fed to kind of start the printing presses again. But for the present, it appears as though they have halted their quantitative easing to anyone who wants to look. And the balance sheet clearly reflects a shrinking. If that continues, then we're going to have a recession. There's no way out of it. But I think it's more likely that they'll be more accommodative. I doubt they'll stop raising interest rates, though. I'm sticking to that 4 for 2019 prediction.
Okay, you're going to win like a Ginzu Knives if they only do 2 or something like that?
Right. No, I don't think there's a second place.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There is talk, of course, that they're done. They should stop. They're not going to raise interest rates anymore. I disagree. I think they'll do 4 more this year. Whether they reverse the quantitative easing engine or not, well, that remains to be seen. But it's clear to me that the banks can kind of take up the Fed's role for 3 more years, given their current cash situation.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's take a little break here. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning. This is The Real World Money. If you care to join us, pop on in, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Got a few emails. We're going to get to them this morning, or you can do the telephone thing and doesn't require your thumb, so you might know how to do it, but you know, give it a try. 888-663-6386. We're kind of head over feet over this Pearlseum product to brush your toothies with, to take internally, to put on your face. It's really quite an extraordinary, really, really nice product to brush your teeth with. Here's a little bit on it if you haven't heard about it, and you can try it on our website. Here's a short explanation how this product, Pearlseum, works with our teeth from Dr. Rulin Zhu.
So basically, when you brush your teeth with the pearl, make your existing teeth stronger and also filling up, because our teeth is being harmed every day by what we eat. It can become porous or weak, even loose part of the bones. So when you brush teeth with the Pearlseum, and the pearl powder will stimulate the new bone growth and also make the existing teeth very strong.
So it's actually stimulating new growth on the teeth in a natural way and not painting something over it?
It is very natural. It's make existing teeth stronger. New growth of the bone, it is very beautiful color. You know, it's kind of like a pearl. And especially the pearl is a crystal. And so when it grows, the bone is the most healthy way.
Yeah, we love this product. Give it a try if you'd like. Click on the Pearlseum ad on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. We have it set up to go to the 2 container where you get a nice discount. But if you only want 1 to start, just click over to the single bottle and get that one. It's the Pearlseum, the ad right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. And the link we have is to the little powder. And they have a small plastic spoon you can just put on your toothbrush. But you can get the capsules if you want. But I suggest the powder. Try that. It's a lot more versatile and you can play around with it more. One of our guys we really like are Dr. Thomas Cowan. A cool guy. And we've had him on the show 3 or 4 times. And I get his little email things. He does a little blog, and he's pretty very big on sulfur. Yeah. He said, I like to put in my water 30 minutes before every workout. The morning mix, he does sulfur with the Shizandra and Shilajit. And he said it's really this little combo really helps his post-workout, any kind of soreness and all of that, and his ability to lift weights and all this kind of thing. He says without adequate sulfur stores, Dr. Cowan says detoxification is impaired. Lactic acid tends to accumulate in the tissues, and that's the stuff that makes it sore, and also the stuff that can get into your little heart muscles, and it's not a good thing when that happens, when the sympathetic system is, you know, on retro, and then you get more sympathetic, and the parasympathetic is tampered down, the more lactic acid, and his whole conjecture about the heart and the myocardial infarction happens when the lactic acid builds up in the heart too much. So this is a good thing to take, sulfur. We really like it. If you'd like to order some, check it out right on our front page. If you'd like to get more than 4 pounds, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. You can get some Shizandra if you'd like to do Dr. Cowan's combo from Shen Blossom on our website. Shizandra tincture can do some sulfur in the glass, you know, and then do the you know, the Shizandra tincture. And then we don't do a Shilajit on our site, but you can go on Amazon, and we like the Forever Herbs Forever. They have a nice Shilajit product that's really helps to batten down the stress and the stuff with the cortisol levels and stuff like that. And he said there are many other ways of adding sulfur to your diet, which have been outlined in the work by Stephanie Seneff on the role of sulfur preventing the oxidation of cholesterol. So it's doing a lot of good things. You don't want oxidative cholesterol, because that even gunks up the arteries more, even when it's not repairing things. Pure organic sulfur on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Andrew Goss, did you know that sulfur that you take all the time is doing all these good things, even more than we've ever realized?
Yeah, right? No, I never knew.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
I just know I feel better, so.
You take it, that's what you feel.
But I don't do it the sissy way. I don't put it in water.
I know, you just eat it, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
I'm getting to where I like the crunch.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, you're hardcore. You're hardcore.
Okay. I know it's morning when I, you know, it's crunch time. Now I know what it means.
Crunch time. He said, hi there. I used to work for the Fed's Department of Interior, a seasonal employee. May through October. And he said the operation had maybe 25 to 30 maintenance peeps during season, total of 150 during admin peeps. So the off season we had 100 to doing nothing to speak of, really. Seasonal boots on the ground were tasked with making the place actually work. Too much snow in the winter to have visitors or even to do maintenance. Of course, no maintenance was actually done. They just let the entire infrastructure fall apart for like 20 years at a time. And then they had the newly formed project crew, which was my position, go and rebuild everything so much the easier. Wow. The 100 plus peeps in the clock year round had to push paper on a bad day, or on a good day, they'd just drink coffee and drive around making sure that the slaves were doing what they needed to do.
Yeah. And,
wow, just sounds kind of, he says, yeah, I know the government works, but from the inside out, it really doesn't. Not 80% of the employees' cases. The reason everyone is so pissed about the shutdown is because it's only year-round peeps that ain't getting paid for doing nothing. Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Nice summation. Thank you, my friend.
It must be that bad, I know.
Yeah, no, that's how bad it is. I've witnessed it from the inside as well. Even the armed services,
I know. It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, I was in
Do
the
I
Navy.
Do I need to train my guy? I remember that line from Idiocracy. Do I need to train that guy? No. He knows how to sit on his butt just as well as you do. So don't worry about it. You know, he doesn't need training.
I was at several different bases, and virtually we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Nobody did anything.
You're just there.
Nobody
just
did there. Anything. You know, you just,
well, yeah.
I mean, they say they do stuff, but they do something, but what do?
Nothing meaningful.
No.
When
no.
you put a list, make a list of things that need to be done.
No, they don't do anything.
Kind of what they do is not anywhere on the list, never mind at the bottom. It's not even on the list. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I think
huge.
A nice extended shutdown helps you ferret out. Okay, well, we really don't need that, do we? We're done without it for a month. I hope that some of these furloughs turn into RIFs. Reductions in force. The trigger date is 30 days. After 30 days of furlough, you can fire them. And that's the reality. You know, nothing else matters.
Yeah, but then you lose. He loses 800,000 votes, right?
Maybe.
Not good.
I doubt they voted for him anyway.
Oh, the government employees. Okay. So they're libbies. So
well, I've heard that joke. I think it might have even originated from him or his staff that these are all Democrat voters that are out of work. I don't know that it has anything to do with party affiliation. I really believe Mr. Trump is trying to fix something. So I stand behind our president.
You're still $2 trillion has been created, more debt in the last 2 years, right?
So correct.
He's clocking about $1 trillion a year, the president.
Yeah.
In the red, right?
Which is pretty good.
Compared, because O had more, right? O had more.
Well, 1.2, not just didn't O. He?
Everybody.
President Obama doubled the national debt. Yes, he did.
From 10
but
to 20,
so did
right?
President Bush.
Of course.
And so did President Reagan. And
they all doubled, right?
They all doubled the national debt. So President
Trump. How can that
Trump
be?
Is,
I mean, why do you need double? I don't get that.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Yeah. Is it just more stuff that nobody needs?
They call it exponential growth.
Yeah, exponential growth. More bases around the world and more stuff, more installing democracy.
Wow. That's right.
More.
That's what we need. More of that. More, and then more.
Just like this giant squid that just keeps growing.
Yeah. Well, the rule in the federal budgeting process.
Yeah.
Now, I got I where President Trump me. Called those guys in and said, I want you to reduce your budget by 5%.
By 5%, yeah.
Yeah. Well, typically, that zero baseline budgeting is you have to stay with the same budget that you got last year. That's where we start.
Right.
And then anything else you want to do, you add on to that. So cutting the budget by 5%, I'd like to see that be the rule every year. The fact is that the federal government has engaged in more things outside of its purview, outside of its mandate. Should just stick to the duties enumerated in the Constitution and then stay out of everything else.
Yeah. That's what George said. That's what old George Washington, he took out his wooden teeth and said something like, stay out of the affairs of Europe, right? It's a land of eternal war.
Avoid foreign entanglements, yes.
What a great line. Yeah.
Well, it's true. I mean, look at that withdrawal from Syria. You can't withdraw from Syria. Why? Well, because the Turks will kill the Kurds if you do that.
Right.
Well,
is that our business?
The Turks say the Kurds are terrorists. And we say, the Kurds helped us in our battle against ISIS. So, one man's ceiling is another man's floor. So now we can't leave because if we do, the Turks are going to kill the Kurds.
Just a mess,
It is.
It's
just
a mess.
We shouldn't have involved ourselves. That's the reality.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think Mr. Trump, President Trump, I think he knows that. I mean, I think he really gets that, being a business guy and not being part of the...
certainly discovered it.
Part of the swamp, And he looks at it and says, what are we doing? I mean, even NATO, he keeps talking
that's
about...
That's where...
Is he getting some heat from that?
Whew. Oh, man. Treason. How dare you suggest...
Well, what has NATO ever done in the last 50 years?
Stop Russia from invading other nations.
No.
You know, that evil empire.
That one.
Yeah. See, in reality, when the USSR disintegrated, NATO should have disintegrated. When it was the USSR, it had the might and the power to be a threat. And now I think, Vlad's just trying to keep things alive in his own little square.
Yeah, keep
there.
People working, and so he gets staying in power.
Yeah,
right?
He's not thinking about invading anyone. Of course, Ukraine is the exception that everyone wants to.
Yeah, but everybody's got their issues with the we have it with Puerto Rico and Guam, sure. and you know, and yep. and all that stuff. And China's got it with Taiwan, and right, it's just part of right. the deal, you know. And England's got it with Ireland, right?
Right.
They all have these little tertiary areas that they want to control, and it's not our
right.
It's not our
but
business.
Now the game has gotten so big, yeah. and you know, if you look at it from the perspective of the United States, we should just be minding our business. I mean, that was that Fugio coin, remember? Mind your business.
Mind your business.
Favorite. Yeah.
Mind your business.
Mind your business. That's what Benjamin Franklin suggested we put on our coins.
No.
And I couldn't agree with that more. You know, the folks that want to tell you how to do your business and should be minding their business, that's the truth.
Well, yeah, but you better just hang on to that one, because if the global eye have their way in the years to
the
come,
internationalists.
I like it. The internationalists yeah. have their way in the years to come. Mm-hmm. As you said, I agree with you that there's no way anybody that even comes close to not being a socialized is going to ever get in, or you know what I mean, an internationalist. They're going to yeah. make. They're going to make sure.
They'll never let it happen.
Now, if they got to personally stuff every ballot box from here to, you know,
whatever
Johnson City,
do.
Baby, they're going to do
never
it.
Never let it happen again.
I
ballot box number five.
I agree yes. with you. It ain't mm-hmm. happening now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so we better batten the hatches. You think we're going to get to the 5Gs like God, gold, guns, grub, and girls? I mean, the 5G safety issue, you know?
You know, I have turned my attention lately to the big 1 ounce $20
oh,
gold
you have
pieces.
Now. You
know, as much as I love rarity,
yeah.
You know, the basic semi-numismatic gold is a good thing to stack.
Okay, what are those? Tell us about those. 1 ounce those gold pieces, so they're semi-numismatic. There's no real collectible value, right?
No big collectible yeah, value.
Just an ounce of gold.
You know, they got an ounce of gold with a few $100 premium in prime condition, you know, in mint state. You could buy them circulated for even less. But where are we today in gold? We got to be approaching 1300. And I know that we've been selling the heck out of those over the last 2 weeks.
$12.95 today.
Unbelievable.
So what do you sell those 1 ounce gold guys for?
You know, I couldn't even begin to tell you, but I know they're less than $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, they're not a huge premium over their actual gold content. And you know, in the event of even the most dire, drastic collapse,
I'd still have a sock full of those suckers.
Exactly, exactly,
that's right.
Exactly.
I'd feel better with a sock full of those suckers.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Precisely.
You can make your house payment for a year or something like that?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So it'll keep you alive, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And certainly it's a great store of value that doesn't rely upon an organized collector market.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about this is a very rare coin, it's one of only 100. Okay, great. But in the event of a complete collapse, who's going to want it, right? It's not going to be liquid again until things settle out. Or it's not going to be worth the price it should be worth until things settle out.
Yeah.
So every portfolio that we put together lately, and certainly historically, contained some of these coins. The way that I put it to my really collector-type clients is, this way, you'll have something to sell. I know you'll never want to sell that super rare coin.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you have something to ditch.
Yeah, but you know, you want to have something to sell, and that's the way we view these coins. The $20.
What are they called?
$20 Liberty or St. Gaudens, although as I understand it, we're really running low on the St. Gaudens type. That seems to be the most popular one. But to me, the Liberty is 50 times rarer than the St. in higher grades. I think few of them survived. And so anyway, we have the Liberty and the St. Gaudens type. Again, these are based mostly on their gold content, not so much on their collectability, although I think that'll change. When gold was very high, the premium above the gold for these semi-numismatic coins was very high.
Yeah.
And as gold fell, the premium fell right along with them. Yeah, you know, for folks that bought them in 2011, that's not comfortable, I got to say. I mean, you know, in 2011, these coins were $2,200 to $2,400. Gold was $1,900.
Yeah, that's that, when people right? were buying when gold was high, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's not the time to buy them. And so I'm kind of sending out the alert now. If you're thinking about buying semi-numismatic gold, don't wait till gold's 13 and then 14 and 1,500. do it now while gold is still relatively cheap, although I can't believe I'm saying that. It's up $100 in the last, what, month?
Yeah, last month, yeah.
Yeah. So,
these are semi-numismatics. They're Liberties, St. Gaudens, one ounce of gold, circa in the 1500 range or less.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, depending, I mean, you know, if you're going to get the best ones, obviously they're over $2,000, but you don't need the best ones. All you need is just like a low-grade mint state coin. It's a big one-ounce gold coin. So that will always be what it's supposed to be. And I urge people who have dead money, if you're just saving money.
Dead money.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, you mean like in the bank.
Yeah, dead money.
Dead exactly. money, yeah.
You're not saving it for anything particular. You're just saving it so that you have it when you need it. Wow, your $20 gold piece fits that bill. So if you have a broker, call and ask them. They have the specifics. I really don't. I can't keep up with the day-to-day inventory. But, you know, you call Mitch or Tony, Fred, Donna, you know, whoever your broker is. If you don't have one.
Get one.
Then get one right away, especially if you haven't picked up the free literature. One of these fine people will train you or teach you what you need to know so that once you have this knowledge, you can buy and sell it with anyone. You'll know what the heck you're doing. It's easy enough to do. In fact, the three audio CDs I gave away last year, they're in again. I'd love to re-extend the Secret World of Money offer, but I can't. So I'll leave it like this. You have three audio CDs, The Federal Reserve, The Definition of Money, and Protecting Your Wealth. All three will give you the details of the monetary markets and how you can protect your wealth. You can just call 800-468-2646. Mention the Timpone Show.
Yeah, baby.
And we'll... Yeah.
Take care of you.
And we'll send them to you free. That's your benefit
man.
There.
So why would I get one of these Gaudens or Liberties or just get one of these chunks of ounces that the mint produces? What's the advantage?
Well, every coin that the mint makes today, and I know, I think you're referring to the American Eagles.
I don't know. I just made
up. No, they strike these 1 ounce gold coins. And the premiums are 4-6% over already. So, you know, it's not like they're free. You got the ounce of gold there at, say, $1,300, and then you pay another $75 or $80 for the mint to strike it into an ounce of gold, and then every other one is exactly like yours, perfect. Not one has ever been used as money. And you compare that to, say, a 1901 $20 gold piece, one of my favorite dates. They only made 100,000 coins that year. That was the year after McKinley initiated the gold standard, and so, or reinitiated, I should say. And so they didn't make many, and the ones that were made are largely circulated. I know we uncovered a hoard of 01s about a month and a half ago, and they're starting to come back from the grading service now. So, I mean, you know, there's a coin that, goodness, that has a real good shot to become a numismatic coin. But for now, it's semi-numismatic, and it's a great way to store your wealth for the long term.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email. Recently watched a movie called Shock and Awe on TV. I vaguely remember hearing the opposite opinion than was being fed to the American public that Saddam had WMDs. It was great to hear the name of the new news organization, Knight Ridder, and the reference to Tell the Truth. I remember that. At the time, you were broadcasting from one radio network about that. Were you? How were you talking about that? Was the movie accurate? This is Grace from Arizona.
Yes, Grace.
Well, we weren't doing this show, but we were on KLBJ, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We were still doing the World of Money.
Of Money. On KLBJ in Austin, right?
Right.
Yeah, the Knight Ridder thing, they're no more, right? Somebody bought them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens when you tell the truth, man.
That's right. Try not to do that if you want to stay and be a news organization.
Yeah, because what else did they do? And I want to look, see if I could find the Knight Ridder. What did I watch? I don't know. I watched some movie. Maybe it was Shock and Awe. I don't know.
And it could have been.
And I saw how cool Knight Ridder was. I go, man, I want to get their website and just go to the... Well, they don't exist anymore. Somebody bought them, right? Who bought them?
Yeah. It was an American media company. Uh-huh. I mean, it was an American company, but it was like 33 or 34... newspapers.
Oh, yeah, so, that's right.
And they had, you know, television stations and everything else. So they had a long history of bringing technology.
Real stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I think it was, what was there? Who the heck?
Were they doing the Iran-Contra thing too? Were they involved with that one in San Diego? Was that the, I don't know.
Well, I know this. You remember the San Jose Mercury News?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what.
Yeah.
Was that
Well, they were the ones that broke the whole Iran con. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Ah, yeah, that's why I saw it. I think I saw a movie on the San Jose Mercury News story.
That
was great. Good movie. What was the name of it?
Yeah, Jeremy Dargani. I want to say Irons, but I know it was somebody else. Yeah. But he was a reporter who broke the story, went down there. And they came to him. Tried to shut him up, and he wouldn't shut up. So eventually he killed himself. I think he shot himself twice in the head with a shotgun or something.
His family and all that stuff,
yeah. Just to make sure he was really dead.
Boy, he start poking the giant in the eye on that level, and you better be careful.
Oh, man.
Real careful.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all of these so-called those types of outlets that could be counted on to report. Well, what do we call that? The truth.
Yeah.
Yes, that was
the concept.
If you want the actual real story, and you would typically get it from a night reader paper or a TV station.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, they were gone. Uh-huh. They couldn't last long with that attitude.
Is there anybody out there now just kind of being really objective with the news reporting? Anybody that you know of?
The citizen reporter, the internet, you know, the guys that are out there doing investigative reporting and then putting their findings.
And the blogosphere thing.
Yeah.
That's about where you're going to get.
That's where you're going to get the Ida Tarbell type of stuff. You remember the muckraker that exposed the trusts and everything from the Rockefeller era.
Right, right.
Her name was Ida Tarbell.
Oh, good for her.
And she was an independent researcher and writer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's doing the heavy lifting now when it comes to truth. The rest of it is, you remember TASS.
TASS, the news agency, yeah.
The Soviet news agency that would, every one of its reporters would say exactly the same thing because they were all reading off the same script.
They do that now. Have you ever seen some of those videos?
I know. There's one now circulating on this manufactured crisis at the border, right? So everybody's saying exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah. That's what they cut. They'll do NBC in San Diego CBS in Portland. And they say they're exactly the same thing. Oh,
yeah. So if everybody's calling it exactly the same thing, I mean,
where
manufactured crisis at the border.
Yeah.
That's what I'm. I can't believe everybody came up with that sentence or phrase at the same exact time.
No, not likely. Not likely.
Not very likely. God. Yeah.
Here's a question for Andrew, for this week's show. I have been reading Ray Dialo. Is it Dialo?
Dalio.
Dalio, sorry.
Ray Dialo.
Dialo?
Is that Dialo. What
okay. Yeah. I've been reading Ray Dialo's book, The Big Debt Crisis, and I've come across some of his comments concerning 2008. I wanted to get your opinion. He said, they inevitably chose to print, as they did in this case, which is when things changed dramatically in 2008. What was the difference in 2008 was the speed at which the policymakers made the crucial step. The 1930 to 1933 depression went on so long because policymakers were slow to react. Not because of their problems were worse, but because they weren't. Still, the 2008 crisis would have been a lot less painful if the policymakers had acted even earlier.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. He also said, they're Paulson, Bernanke, and Geithner, complementary qualities in combination with their often hourly coordinations and their shared willingness to be bold and quickly evolve policies based on new learnings were critical to their navigating through the crisis.
Yes.
Any thoughts on how our current group, Mnuchin, Powell, and Williams, compare? Ooh.
Huh, okay.
Well, that's a good question.
That's great.
Williams is the head of the Fed? New York Fed?
No.
Who's Williams?
Not sure who you're referring to. We obviously, Powell is the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Mnuchin, he's the treasury.
Mnuchin, secretary of the treasury.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're suited for what they have to do. Just as Janet Yellen was suited for what she had to do. Ben Bernanke, don't forget, he had written the entire program of how the Fed mismanaged the 1929 debacle.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his thesis in college, I think, was the, you know, how it should have been handled. So he was already identified as someone who would do what needed to be done, which Lord knows did he do. The quantitative easing under Bernanke, I think, will be studied as how to handle this sort of a crisis. And I think Mr. Powell, Jerome Jay, he has this not afraid to do what needs to be done attitude that I think will lead him down the same path as Bernanke. So he knows what needs to be done, and this is why I say it depends how the players react. If they're accommodative, if they say, okay, you know, here's money available for this and money available for that, then I don't think we'll have a recession or a depression or a collapse. If, however, they really want to stick it to this president, this is where they'll do it in monetary policy. So needless to say, I'm keeping a close eye on the balance sheet. But either way they go, I mean, if they drive us into a tree and crash the entire economy, we're going to have a recession and people are going to be worried about the value of their money. Gold and silver will do well. If, however, he turns up the dial and says, okay, we're going to crank out as much money as we need to get us through this problem, then we're going to have inflation and gold and silver coins will do well. So given the state that we're in right now, we don't have reserves to turn to, contrary to what people believe. We're $22 trillion in debt, and we're looking at another $5 trillion more just to make it through the rest of this president's term. Mm. So I don't think there's any option that causes gold and silver coins to go down. That's just my view. You might see a short-term blip, as we did in the last year. But I think given the long-term fundamentals, if you want to put something away and forget about it, you could do a lot worse than rare American gold and silver coins.
This emailer goes on, if my understanding of this monopoly game is accurate, you can well understand how credit cycles work on the level of the whole economy. Early in the game, right, people have a lot of cash, only a few properties, so it pays to convert your cash into property.
Yep.
As the game progresses and players acquire more and more houses and hotels, more and more cash is needed to pay the rents that they are charged when you land on property.
Land on boardwalk.
That has a lot of them.
Two hotels.
Some players are forced to sell the property at discounted prices to raise the cash. Yep. So early in the game, property is king, and later in the game, cash is king.
Cash is king.
Those who play the game best understand how to hold the right mix of property and cash as the game progresses.
That's right. And it's the banker who is always injecting cash into the system. So you may, you know, pay rent, et cetera, but at the end of the day, the banker is the one putting the cash into the game, obviously. So how much better off would we be without additional cash in a monopoly game? You know, think about it in those pure terms. I even contemplate the idea that have you heard that free parking thing in Monopoly, right, where all fines and everything are paid into the free parking, and if you land on it, you take all the cash. So even modifications of the game require the injection of cash to keep the game going at a smooth pace. And this is really what the central bank does. So when, you know, that taking the leaning against the wind is the best way to describe it. When everybody's buying, the Fed is selling. And when everyone is selling, the Fed is buying. So in this way, they keep that proper mix. And incidentally, one of the main criticisms I have to the cryptocurrency, without a central bank, you have the ebbs and flows of capital. And this is why. I mean, it's curious. Last weekend, I went to Jekyll Island to spend the day Saturday.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. I can't help myself. You know, the Millionaires Club there and the idea that the Federal Reserve was hatched there by the financiers of the day, and what they discussed and what did they think. Well, they honestly thought that they could repeal this boom and bust cycle. This bust cycle, of course, had just occurred in 1907. And so it was, in the beginning, everyone's speculating, as the writer suggests. And then at the end, everyone's trying to unspeculate. You know, they want to unload everything and combine their cash. So the Federal Reserve job, and what they thought was that when people are hoarding things, they can put plenty of cash out there. And when they're hoarding cash, they can put even more cash out there to make it not so lucrative to buy, right? They can ebb and flow, withdraw or put cash in to make the value of things higher or lower. It's manipulation, plain and simple. And I think the Fed has done an admirable job in maintaining a lack of a bust or a boom.
If you'd like to be on the show, patrick@oneradionetwork.com is the email address, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's an email from Willie. He said, I previously asked Andrew if mortgage contracts can be altered after a currency revaluation. He said, no. After listening to last week's episode, I realized that while the contract may not change, it would be possible for outstanding cash savings to be devalued relative to the contract effective, making an old dollars a fraction of the price of new dollars.
Correct.
If one is using debt as a blessing, this would put cash savers at a significant risk in a devaluation where contracts are de facto denominated in the new currency and the old currency takes a hit. What does Andy think about this possibility?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this is really why the idea of a two-tiered system, which has been tried in many revaluations where they say, you know, we have the old one that's called this, the Curzo, and the new ones that are called this, and there's a significant risk for cash savers. This is why I prefer real money, because whatever the new instrument is that they've created, now you have to denominate it against a 1904 $20 gold piece, and you know, whatever it takes in terms of purchasing power to buy that gold coin is now denominated in the currency, whatever it might be. So while you might not always be able to count on that currency unit buying that $20 gold piece, you know that $20 gold piece will always get whatever it is that's used as money. So I mean, that's the difference. So it is to and step off of stop taking receipts for your stored value and put the stored value actually into money itself. That's the gold and silver coin.
Amber writes in on this January 16 morning, I keep seeing the term global currency reset in many websites as I doodle around Patrick's terms to see what's going on. What is this? Is it possible? Is this even of interest to me? Thanks for the show. Okay.
No.
Global currency reset. I've seen it a lot.
Sure.
There's a lot of people talking about it out there. Is it
of course.
Is it just made up?
Yeah. Well.
What is it?
The idea that we should buy dinar, right? Because they're going to revalue it, and today it's going to be worth more than it was last year. So the idea of a global currency reset is not realistic. And I mean, sure, you can gamble on it if you like, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, you mean emerging market currencies would revalue?
Correct.
Not just
all currencies.
All currencies like India. Everybody would just kind of revalue to get even?
Yeah. I think Jim Willey is probably pushing that harder than anybody else.
Yeah.
And there's another guy, too. We've talked about him, the former CIA guy. But anyway, their suggestion is that there's going to be a new price, gold price. And, you know, for a guy like me who buys and sells gold coins.
Be kind of cool.
Sure. Yeah. Wouldn't it make sense for me to say, oh, yeah, watch out for the global currency
reset, right?
Yeah, because, you know, gold will skyrocket in price. And sure, the president has talked about seeing gold backing our currency again. I don't think it's possible. It's something that, I mean, in history, it's only been once or twice. And, of course, I would argue that the recall of gold was a currency reset. You know, prior to the gold being gone, it was a $20 gold piece, right? That 1 ounce $20 gold piece.
Yeah.
$20 an ounce. It was easy for people to know what their money was worth. And then the president took all the gold and instantly it was $40 an ounce. That was a reset. With the world, no. It's much easier to simply inflate or deflate the currency of an individual nation or group of nations, so to keep things in line. That's it. You know, you lose control when you go to a reset.
And isn't the IMF, BIS, UN all involved with all these countries in their currency, and they just can't raise it willy-nilly just because they want to, right?
Because they're all kind of tied in with it. The IMF was founded.
Right.
I mean, that was its entire purpose. The International Monetary Fund is intended to be the central bank for the central banks.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you want to talk about war. If there was a currency, every theme that I see centers around a one world currency, right? So we're going to all dump our currencies together. We're all going to stand up under one world currency.
And
you could put a big Z or something
like that on a currency or whatever. You know.
Whatever.
Pyramid with his eyeball and a Z or something. Let's take this phone call. Good morning. Where are you calling from? Who's this?
Midland, Texas. This is Frank.
Hello, Frank. How you doing?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're just fine here. What's up?
Well, I was digging through old papers, and I found an interesting congressional record note here from March 17, 1993, H-1303 from the House, and it talks about Mr. Trafficant saying...
We're bankrupt.
Then I looked that up on the internet, and it talks about our government's dissolved, the banks took over, and they changed our government to a democracy.
Correct.
And all that.
Well, that's what, look what happened to Trafficant after he did that.
Yeah, I know, they ruined him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. but he was arguing significant fact. You know, I have silver certificates and gold certificates from that era in which it says, you know, there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States $1 in silver payable on demand. Now, that's a contract, and that contract has been repudiated. So the argument is that we were thrown into bankruptcy. Gosh, I haven't talked about this in so many years, Patrick, but I'll do it again. Using the reference of Senate Report 93-549, which came out in the same year, you could prove that the Federal Reserve Bank in the period from 1913 to 1930 caused the corporate bankruptcy of the United States by issuing more notes than they had gold and silver to back it up.
You could prove that, huh?
You could prove that. Wow. Senate Report 93-549 for you scholars out there.
From 13 to 30, they created more dollars than they had gold? Notes than they had gold?
Then they had gold and silver to pay, correct.
Okay.
So that led to a circumstance where the president had to close the banks. And rather than put all those people in jail, maybe hang them from a lamppost, he legalized their behavior and effectively handed over the controls of the nation's money supply to this private Federal Reserve Bank cabal. And they, you know, as agents essentially for the Bank of International Settlement, put the U.S. into reorganization.
Reorg.
So it's not a bankruptcy where, okay, we're not going to pay and you're done, but it is a reorganization. And as Eustace Mullins describes it, they simply continued business handing out these insurance script Federal Reserve notes, what we call dollars, and he just kept handing them out, and they said, well, we're not, when we finally do settle, this is your claim, this is like your claim check, and we don't know what it's going to be, but when we do know, we'll let you know. Well, we've been in this bankruptcy reorganization for nearly 100 years now.
We're still in bankruptcy.
33. Well, we really are.
Yeah.
Where the free market makes the decision as to what gold and silver are worth. We don't tell our citizens that every paper credit dollar that you have is worth, you know, this many dollars. So that was the standard part. It's all floating now. It's in suspense until we settle up.
It's in bankruptcy.
So every dollar that you have represents a claim dollar, but not a standard dollar. But prior to that, we knew that every dollar was a 20th of an ounce of gold. It was 0.7734 ounces of silver. And in this way, you could put money away and know exactly what it's worth. But once they kind of put us into this reorganization, then that is a moving target. And it was finalized really kind of firm when Nixon officially closed the gold window. Because in that period from 33 to 73, we told the world creditors, okay, guys, we don't know exactly yet where this is going to settle. But for the moment, we're cashing in the official value of the dollar at $40.22. So if you bring us $40.22 of Federal Reserve notes, we'll give you an ounce of gold. And the French and the other nations of the world took advantage of that right up until President Nixon closed the gold window in 1971.
Hmm. There you go.
Yeah, and then what about this the Federal Corporation? Why aren't people pissed about that from 71? It wasn't even our constitutional government.
Yeah. Right, yeah, the Constitution of 1871. Well, they don't understand. That's why, you know, if somebody asks you, are you a U.S. citizen, what are you going to say?
No, I'm an American, first class.
Right, well, you know the difference. But you ask a typical voter citizen, hey, are you a U.S. citizen? They're going to say, yes, I am. Well, you've just put yourself under the jurisdiction of the District of Columbia, which is what...
You made yourself
again.
Slave.
Exactly.
You
so
need
you
driver's license because that's interstate commerce, and
you need everything.
All crimes it all, are interstate.
That's right. It all flows from that, and your zip code, your social security number. So, you know, because you have a choice, right? If you think about it, you can claim your constitutional rights as a citizen of Wisconsin. You know, in one of the several states. So you're a citizen of Wisconsin, and that makes you a citizen of the United States of America. But then there are people that are really not state citizens. They're new to the country. They're naturalized, or in the case of Dred Scott decision, right, they're freed indentured servants or slaves, whatever you want to, whatever the appropriate terminology is. And so you got to fashion a citizenship for those people. And I saw Kanye West, the rap star, kind of touch on it for a minute, but he got his amendment wrong. He said, we're going to repeal the 14th Amendment. Okay, I get what you're saying, what you're trying to say, but I think he was repealing the 16th Amendment or something, which was a separate amendment altogether. But the point is, we created a federal national citizenship, which is inferior to a state citizen. You know, these naturalized citizens have civil rights that are enforced by the District of Columbia. So your ladder of hierarchy is the born, natural-born U.S. citizen is at the top of the heap. He created the states. They're the second in line. The states created the federal government. They're third in line. And then the federal government created the 14th Amendment citizen, the naturalized citizen. And by asking you, are you a U.S. citizen, you're kind of trading your natural citizenship for a fashioned second-class citizenship, if you will, that's under the jurisdiction of the federal government. So are you a U.S. citizen? Yes, I'm a U.S. citizen. Okay, great. Then you're under our jurisdiction, and you have to do all these things. So,
right, and if you read interesting Supreme Court cases around that time, they did not think highly of U.S. citizens. They called them lone moles, forms of life, rabble, riffraff, carpetbaggers, all kinds of derogatory terms. And then, you know, people claim constitutional rights, but you actually have God-given unalienable rights, and the Constitution is a contract.
Enumerates them, yeah.
A very small portion of those rights to the government, and then they gave a little portion on down the line to the feds.
But is it true, Andrew, that...
The 14th Amendment, if you research the congressional record, they talked about it in 67, where it was basically a military coup, where they knew it was unconstitutional, and they marched troops into 10 states, including New Jersey, throughout their legislatures, put in their pasties, and passed it.
So, that's right.
I mean, once they get rid of the 14th Amendment, they're in big trouble, because it's not even a law.
Right, it's amendment to the Constitution. So, and it, curious, it didn't. Patrick, we could literally spend 2 days talking about this thing alone, that and the legal tender laws, which, you know, right after 33, people started saying, wait a minute, this says you're going to pay me in gold and silver lawful money, but you want to give me these Federal Reserve notes. And time after time, the courts ruled against the U.S. citizen because, well, obviously, you're a U.S. citizen. You're a member of this club. They can make whatever they want, money. So to me, it all fit together. It was like one needs the other, or it can't operate. You need to be a U.S. citizen in order to have a system of central banking that doesn't use gold and silver coin at its base.
But isn't it true, though, regardless of all of this, what you're saying and Frank's saying, what's on paper, you've told us that we're all in the club anyway.
That's right.
I mean, we're just
to get out of it.
So we're just in it. We're in the club.
Yeah. So if you're going to be in the club, then you...
What's that, Frank?
It's impossible to get out because they won't let their trained monkeys escape, even though you know the law and everything. They have the guns, and the untrained, whatever you want to call it, government official, that won't let you escape.
Yeah, but no one is forcing you to store your wealth in Federal Reserve notes.
Exactly.
And so the Constitution says that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin. So I used to say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the Constitution doesn't apply anymore. Well, it's still there, but it's just that citizens that are subject to it are not as evident as they were 100 years ago or 150 years ago. So it seems that everyone considers themselves a U.S. citizen under the jurisdiction of the federal government, and anyone who is in that category has to follow their rules. So, yeah, you can get out. But it's very uncomfortable out there. They make it so uncomfortable. Look up the Trading with the Enemy Act.
Yeah, you'd spend your life defending yourself,
yeah,
right?
Fighting. Yeah, exactly. So, and I spent the first 20 years of my adult life fighting. And believe me, it's just no fun.
It's just not worth it. Yeah.
When I decided it's better to just know the rules of the system and play by the rules and make yourself one of the wealthy. That's really the only way to fight this. Because you pound your head against the wall trying to, as I've put it in the past, get off of the plastic and onto the couch.
On the couch, yeah.
You know?
Mm. All right, Frank, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. One point here, though. You said between 13 and 30, they created more dollars than they had gold.
Correct.
But I thought that's what they used to form the Federal Reserve, which was 1913. So
from 13, remember... during the initial years of the Federal Reserve System, the problem, as far as the people were concerned, the reason they accepted it, had to do with a uniform currency, where a dollar in New Jersey looks the same as a dollar in California.
After 1913.
Correct.
Right.
Well, leading up to the acceptance of it, it was a uniform currency, and then it was central clearing, so that you wouldn't have to go find the bank that issued the note and get them to give you the money. Remember I told the story of the Wildcat Banks?
Sure.
They called them the Wildcat Banks because they would locate a bank in the middle of the woods so that you had to fight wildcats to get there. And once you did, they might shoot at you from inside the bank.
Oh, good.
So that you couldn't come up and present your note to get your gold and silver money. So these Wildcat notes would be passed around cities. And, of course, they would have to go to the bank before they could cash them. There was no central clearing entity. So in many instances, you're presented with a note for a dollar. You don't recognize the bank. Well, they grouped them all in one category. They called those wildcat banks. And then there was the problem of banks that sprung up, you know, put $10, $20 gold pieces in their vault, issued 30 $20 gold notes, and then ran away with the coins. And the saying in those days were that you were better to have a bad counterfeit on a good bank than a real note on a bad bank. So there were so many problems with the currency, with the transfer of the actual currency, that the Federal Reserve was embraced. And in the beginning, from like 1913 to 1924, you could show up at a Federal Reserve bank and present a note, and they would convert it into cash, gold, or silver coin, like on the spot, over the counter. So much so that people started saying, wow, this is great. I don't have to go find a wildcat bank. I just walk into any affiliated Federal Reserve bank, and they'll turn this note into gold. They all look exactly the same. So, you know, you don't have to worry about which one is good and which one is bad and which one is counterfeit. They even had Grant's note register in those days where if somebody was trying to pay you with a note, you would consult this book to see whether the issuer of the note was any good or not.
That's hilarious.
So, all right, so they were presented to us as a lifesaver, and in the first decade of their existence, they did exactly that. And, man, they kept it tight. So, you know, if they issued a note, they had a gold coin to back it up. But then right around the roaring 20s, think about that for a minute. Why did the 20s roar? Well, they roared because the Federal Reserve started doing the same thing that the banks used to do, and that is that they issued more notes, most times loaned to themselves or their directors or people closely connected with the entity, and then they would go out and buy things with those notes, which caused the economy to roar above and beyond what it would have roared if they would have stuck to their knitting and only made one $20 bill for every $20 gold piece. So by the time 1929 came, it was in full swing. And you had the Florida land boom, and you had the stock market boom. It was a heady period, to say the least, so much so that that's what historians have named it, the Roaring Twenties. But then just as quick as they had cranked up the printing press to make the economy roar, the Federal Reserve, I don't know, they got scared or they were operating in concert, but all of a sudden they just stopped issuing more notes than they had gold and silver to back it up. And now the crash of 29 came as people who recognized what was being done started selling their stocks and gathering the notes and then cashing the notes in for money. And by the time President Roosevelt took office, the banks were empty. They had no more gold, no more silver, and still mega quantities of outstanding notes to redeem. So he just legalized the fraud and said, okay, you can't ask for your gold anymore. We're going to gather it all up and put it in a fort in the middle of Kentucky with glass walls, and you can drive up and look at it, but you can't ask for it.
And you can take the kids.
And then we're going to issue the money.
That'll be good.
That's
take
what
the
they
kids
did.
On a Sunday, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, what a history. Isn't it interesting? Man,
everything
we've been through, and nothing is as it seems. I mean, is it? Yeah, I mean, people don't really understand who we are.
Especially given that they've forgotten what money is. So.
Stu writes, and it would appear that the current conflicts relates to those who pay taxes and those who do not pay taxes.
Yeah, well,
ooh.
I think I got those statistics. I think he's correct there because... the top 50% of income tax payers in the United States pay 100% of the taxes. So the bottom 50% pay zero.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and as soon as the people realize that they can vote in a politician that says, I'm going to give you free college, free health care, free education... minimum income, basic income. You know, you're going to get a check every month from the government. You know, no matter whether you work or don't work, doesn't matter. So you can see immediately how that the writer is correct. Now the battle becomes, I'm not going to get any taxes or pay any taxes. In fact, I'm going to get benefits from the government versus the 50% that I'm working and I'm going to pay the 100% of the taxes. So it is a war between those who pay and those who don't.
There's a movie, it's a really good movie, called The Ides of March, all about this guy running for president in the Ohio primary, directed, written, and starred by George Clooney. And right in there, you know, he's running for president, and he's talking about how the rich are not paying any taxes, right? And right. It was just interesting, because he was real clear about that, you know, in this movie. And so I did go back and say, well, who wrote this? And I said, oh, George Clooney. And of course, he's a never-Trumper and, total. But isn't it interesting how in these movies, they'll put out a meme to do their political or their, you know, and it's all fake. It's all fake news, essentially.
Right.
Right? It's just fake news.
It is indeed.
Yeah, you see why people believe this stuff.
I do.
Right.
I mean, I got into a heated discussion about the rich and how the rich should be made to pay for all these, and the corporations shouldn't get a break, and so forth.
Right.
Now, you look at the history of tax collections. Even if you go back to the high corporate tax years of Obama, excuse me, President Obama, you're still, you're forcing the corporations to move is what you're doing. I mean, corporations are the ones that create the jobs, but if they're being taxed so heavily that it's more profitable for them to move their operations to a foreign country, that's what they're going to do. And the rich, it's even worse. You know, oh, I'm rich, you're going to tax me 80%? Great, I'm packing my stuff and moving to the Bahamas. See you later. Oh, so now we're going to make a law forcing you to stay. And this was a gentleman from Chicago who's making that argument. Well, we just passed a law that they can't leave. Now you can't leave. Okay. Well, you're in Chicago where the governor is proposing a 1% statewide property tax to make up for the pension shortfall. How about if on top of that he passes a law that says you can't leave? You can't sell your house. You can't move.
Well, they're liable to pass any kind of law like that, you know.
That's right. Oh. So don't think they won't come for yours. They're coming for yours because there's nowhere else to get it. It is the heart of America's tax revenue comes from the middle, not from the top and not from the bottom. It comes right smack from the middle. So, you know, you start, remember, tax the rich started in 1912 when the income tax was passed in 1913. It was only for the rich, and they only paid 2%.
So they've got occasional cortex out there suggesting
70%.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah. I mean,
it's not, at the end of the day, it's not about percent, it's about revenue. Huh. And so if you tax a rich person 70%, well, one thing rich people can do is move. That's what they can do.
They got jets, man.
They'll get right on the jet. Boom, be gone. It's the poor and the middle class who can't just move every time you're raising taxes. They're forced to stay, and they're the ones that the bulk of this cost is going to fall on. And you know, have you heard the means testing thing?
Well, they're beginning to talk a little bit about it. They don't use that term, do they? What term are they using?
I don't care what they call it. The idea is we're going to math out that you made too much money and you saved too much money, so you don't need Social Security.
We're going to cut
it. You don't need Medicare. Yeah. You don't need it.
Who's putting that out there, the social?
Well, Joe Biden is that's actually part of Joe's thing.
I'm voting
thing,
for
man,
him, you know, man, man.
The rich are collecting Social Security and the rich.
Oh, he's talking about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, we need to take it away from those people. They don't need it. So, okay, is that means testing? Whatever you want to call it.
Hi, Andy.
He's a pretty mainstream candidate to be suggesting means testing.
Hi, Andy and Patrick. I love the show. Andy, with the government shutdown due to Trump being unwilling to lift the debt ceiling, is that essential government employees, i.e. the military, is that how they get paid? Are their paychecks not dependent on money printing like every other facet of the government seems to be? Can't wait to hear your thoughts, okay?
Okay, well, the dirty little secret is that the federal government is the trustee for trillions of dollars in Social Security payments, federal employees' retirement payments, state bonds of every sort. And as trustee, the Secretary of the Treasury can just dip right into the Federal Employees Retirement Fund and take the money, as they've done in the past. And these so-called extraordinary methods of financing government operations are really something people haven't really considered. But the fact is that any money in their possession can be diverted to run the operations of government, whether it's appropriated or not. So... It's, you know, the best it's going to be a legal challenge, because obviously the Congress has the power of the purse, right? The House of Representatives, not the executive. They haven't appropriated the money. Well, worse, they're up against the debt ceiling in 2 or 3 more weeks. So there's got to be a deal made. I don't know which side's going to blink first, but somebody's going to blink. They have to. I guess it depends who's got the most pressure on them. And my calculations, again, show that the president, using these extraordinary funds, can keep the government open until October with the ones that are currently employed. So typically speaking, if the funds are not appropriated by the Congress, then they cannot be spent by the president. But as you'll notice, they had passed some defense authorization bill earlier in the year, right? Long before this became an issue.
Right.
And so that's why it's a limited government shutdown, because they've given appropriations to defense, and everything else is kind of by the wayside.